This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson. Whether you are a writer, illustrator, or inventor, you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers. They should be yours. Well, this is an exciting day. I have in the studio with me Angela Hunt, who she's an amazing writer. She's written over 100 books. Hi, Angela.
Hi.
Well, just saying that, over 100 books. And, of course, most recently, you did a novelization of a hit movie, mm-hmm. The Risen, mm-hmm. which just came out, and the movie just opened in February, and the book came out at the same time. Mm-hmm. And this is so exciting. We're going to talk about The Risen, and then we'll talk about some of your other books, which are just fantastic.
So, oh, thank you.
Let's talk first about The Risen. Of course, now, many of your books are based on biblical stories, mm-hmm. and so... Is this how you got this? This is like a perfect gig for a writer to be asked to write a novelization of a movie. Was this fun?
Oh, I was delighted. In fact, when I heard the rumor that my publisher, Bethany House, was being considered to produce the novel for the movie that goes along with it, I wrote my editor and pretty much said, pick me, please. Because I was right in the middle of writing historical fiction. I had all the research at the top of my brain, and I just thought it would be fun. I had done novelizations before, so I knew how to do it, and I was thrilled when they chose me and I got to do it.
Well, I've done the vice versa. I've taken novels and written the script, but I was wondering what that process was. I mean, first of all, it's an exciting thing and an honor. Of course, you have a degree in divinity, right?
Two doctorates.
You have two doctorates.
One's in biblical literature and one's in straight theology.
So you know the subject very well, and I believe your husband is also a pastor.
He's a youth pastor.
A youth uh-huh. pastor. So that, mm-hmm. so you've got all of this knowledge, so that made you the ideal choice for this, I'm sure. But what was it like? What's the process like? They show you the movie and then you go like that, and mm-hmm. they give you the script, and then how did you do it?
Well, they gave me a secret link to an unpolished raw cut of the film, so I was able to watch it, and it was very, you know, unpolished, probably straight out of the camera, I'm assuming. And so I was able to watch the actors and watch their gestures and get a feel for exactly how they looked and how they behaved, which was very helpful as I wrote the book because I could describe them accurately then. And then they also gave me a copy of the script. And I discovered, as I went through the script, I discovered there was a love interest. The main character had a love interest who got cut out of the movie because of time constraints. So I loved her story. So I added her back in and even expanded her role, because on my first draft, when my job was just to turn the script into prose, it was only 25,000 words. And, you know, a novel is 70,000, 75
at least, yes.
up.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, now I have to add more stuff. So that was fun because I got to add... it's about this man who's searching for the body of Christ because Pilate has said, find it, we have to make sure that the disciples don't steal it.
Explain who he is.
He's a Roman tribune. His name is Clavius, and he's the sort of the head of the legion that's been stationed in Jerusalem. So he becomes a detective, and he goes to the scene of the crime, quote unquote, and examines the evidence, and then he goes out and interviews suspects. So he does some of that, of course, in the movie, and then I gave him a lot more people to interview because I had to write a lot of words, add a bunch of words. So I loved that. It was fun.
And then, of course, his love interest in the book is a Jewish woman.
Exactly.
Named Esther.
Rachel.
Oh, Rachel. I'm sorry, Rachel.
Rachel. And, of course, she's Jewish. And so I was able to write things from a Jewish perspective. I mean, she is. They've just come through Passover, so she's thinking about the unleavened bread and how it is pierced and striped from baking on this grill in the oven. And so she begins to consider the messianic implications of a lot of verses in Isaiah, and wonders, have I just seen all these, have I seen the fulfillment of these scriptures right before my eyes? And so she begins to put two and two together and comes to a faith in Yeshua, the Nazarene. And Clavius is much more pragmatic. He's a pagan. He really doesn't believe in, he believes in any God who will answer his prayers. So during the course of the story, he prays to Mars and Jupiter, even tries praying to Yahweh, and so it's just a very, they come from it from two entirely different perspectives, but I love Rachel being able to present the Jewish viewpoint.
And you do develop it beautifully. You know, having been done all this research, because we're going to talk about some of your other books, like why I said Esther is because one of your books is Esther, and it's it's, I think, perhaps the favorite of mine, of yours, and
thank
then, of
you.
Course, Bathsheba. And, you know, you have drawn Rachel so completely in this story, and it all comes from this years of research.
Oh, yes, and I have a special affinity for the Jewish people. I mean, they are God's chosen people, and Jesus was a Jew. And so as a Christian, I just think it's our job to revere that faith and to understand it as completely as we can.
And it, so it was lots of fun for you to just go with this and build on it? And
absolutely.
Oh, wow. And, of course, how you handle just the idea of the resurrection and all of this, it's very... It's not easy to write this story, but you did it with the following the movie. And how's the movie? Is it different? You captured exactly what was the movie?
Well, I wanted to respect the screenplay, of course. So I changed very little of the dialogue or the events. I see the screenplay as like a pencil sketch. You know, it's there. It's complete, you can see the story, but then my job as a novelist is to paint in the textures and the sights and the scents and the smells and all the colors and just bring it to life as like a fully formed painting.
Well, I think sometimes reading your books, half the time your mind is back there. You know, it's 2,000 years ago, and because you are so immersed in the period and in the time, and you're so knowledgeable about all the, well, the locations and what went on, you know, the life of the time. So this is fun. Now, when the movie came out, were you at the premiere?
No. In fact, I haven't even been to see it yet, the finished product. Life has just been really busy, and so I haven't had a chance yet to sneak away, but I will.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a thrilling thing for you to go and see it. You know, it's exciting. It's an exciting project. And you know, we've talked about, you know, I mentioned that you've written other you know, biblical related books, but of course many people know you for your wonderful movie that came out on Hallmark.
Oh, The Note.
The Note.
Jeannie Francis.
Oh yeah, I think this was one of the most popular Hallmark movies.
It really was. I think it was the most popular that year. It was 2007.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was absolutely. I remember reading about it, that was the Hallmark winner for the whole year. And in repeats, it's just so, it's such a moving story.
Yes, it is.
It is. And tell us a little bit about that, because I think people, well, I mean, the wonderful thing about things is that these come back, you know, especially on the television series, or you can get it probably on Netflix or one of the other Hulu or someplace. So tell us about that, because how did you write that? That's a very moving story.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was talking with a friend. We were at church. It was Sunday morning, and I was in my husband's middle school department. And I had just, my kids were teenagers, and I just had a really rough week with them. And there had been a plane crash in the news, and there were rumors going around on the internet that people had done all sorts of things in the plane's final minutes. But nobody, I mean, they were just rumors, because how could you substantiate that? And so I remember I looked at my girlfriend and I said, I know what I would do if I was on a plane going down. I would just write a note to my kids and say, dear kids, all is forgiven. Love, Mom. And I would slip it in a baggie or something so it would be sure to wash up or whatever. And then I just looked at her and went, oh, that's it. That's a story right there. And so that was the germ of the story and how it came to be. And I thought, what if a plane crashed in Tampa Bay? The book is set in Tampa Bay. They changed the location for the movie because they wanted it to be a Christmas movie. Uh-huh. And, you know, in December, we don't look very Christmassy in Tampa Bay. Exactly. There's no snow. I mean, so they moved it to a place that would have snow. And but I just start thinking, okay, suppose there's a writer for, I think I called it the Tampa Times in the book, and she's writing this column, and somebody comes up and hands her this note that washed up behind their house, and they assume it's from the plane crash. And it said, dear T, all is forgiven, love, I think it said Dad. And I wanted it to be actually a metaphor, in that, you know, God has written mankind a letter and said, all is forgiven. If you will just, you know, accept that forgiveness, love, Dad, and God is the Father. And so the story on the surface is not a religious story at all, but the meaning is beneath the surface. It's like an onion with layers and you peel them back. But that's what really most of my stories are. They're perfectly fine stories that any secular person might enjoy, but there is usually a spiritual meaning underneath it if you care to dig for it, you know.
And of course, the book was very, very moving. And then when the Hallmark did the thing, I think they captured a lot of the essence of it. They didn't water it down. It's a very moving story, and that's why it was so successful.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like the way they had done it?
I did. I was, and they made some changes. I didn't really mind so much that they moved it somewhere up north.
Yeah.
That's fine. And but they did capture the thing. And plus, on the DVD version, they interviewed me for about 7 minutes, I think, and I was able to explain the meaning in the parable and how I got the idea. So they were very generous with me, and I really appreciated it.
And that DVD is available on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
so you can buy that, and it's worth it because it is a great, great little film to watch. And
thank you.
Very moving. And so this brings us back. I mean, 100 books. You've done 100 books. So that's like such an amazing quantity of books. And you've been writing since you were young?
No, I did not even. When growing up, I never thought I'd be a writer. My family has musical talent. My mother was a singer. I was a singer. So people just assumed I was going to grow up and be a singer. And I did sing professionally for a year, and I sang my way through college, got scholarships for singing in various groups. And but I always thought I would just probably teach music. But one of my mentors pulled me aside and he said, you have a knack for words. And he said, singers are a dime a dozen. He said, you really ought to write something. And I thought, okay. So I changed my major to English and just got, you know, a good education in the classics. It really wasn't professional English or even education. And graduated from college, got married, taught high school English for a year just because this school in the area, a private school, was desperate for a teacher. They fired somebody 2 weeks into the year and hired me, and I didn't know a thing about education, but I knew English, so I taught. And then I wrote curriculum for a church, and then I was a secretary for a year, and I was really just spinning my wheels until the babies came. That was our plan, that someday when the babies came, I would stay home and write. And finally I decided, you know, if you're ever going to be a writer, you may as well just step out and start. So I quit my job and had business cards printed up that have my name, address, and phone number, and said, if you need a writer, call me. And I sent them, I thought, who hires writers? And so I sent them to all the advertising agencies in town. We were in Virginia at the time, by the way, so I'm not telling the story on anybody in this area. But this one man called me and he said, come down and bring your portfolio. And I said, sure. So I ran to the library and got a book on how to dress for success. It was very popular, that particular book, Dress for Success, at that time. And so I read that, so I was dressed for success, had a nice dress, a jacket, a little silk flower on it. And then I went to the office supply store, and I was walking down the aisles, and I spotted the aisle of notebooks, and I found one that said portfolio. And I went, ah, that's what I need. So I bought that.
This is a beautiful story. I love this story.
Absolutely true. And I put some plastic page protectors in it, and of course they look silly empty, so I printed out my resume, which had the school teaching and the singing and the all that other odd stuff, and put that in there, and I went to see him. And so I knocked on his door. He said, come in. It was a little small office, and he said, have a seat. And I said, thank you very much. And he said, may I see your portfolio? And I said, certainly. And I slid it across the desk.
I love this.
He flipped it open, and he went, why, this is empty. And I smiled and said, I know, it's new. And he kind of laughed. He's probably thinking, how green is this girl? And he said, I tell you what, the Bukova Catalog Company is one of our clients. Here's their last year's catalog. Here's their new product list. And so write some catalog copy for us. And I said, thank you. I said, and if you don't like it, you won't have to pay me. And he smiled and said, don't worry, I won't. And so I ran to the library and got a book on how to write catalog copy. And I went home and studied it. And that one was really a no-brainer because, I mean, it was just a matter of looking at what they had said about the other products and coming up with something similar, you know, and I had the list. So anyway, I actually was sort of trembling as I typed out the invoice and charged him $20 an hour and thought, oh my goodness, I'm about to be a professional writer. And I took it down and he paid me, and that's how I got started. So for 5 years, I blundered my way through. There was a magazine in town, and so I started querying them for, would you like a personality profile on this famous person who's coming to town? And they'd say yes. So I'd run to the library and get a book on how to write personality profiles. And I have long believed that being a writer is like being a builder. As long as you know how to use the tools, a hammer and a saw and a T-square, those are analogous to a paragraph and a sentence and a format, a template. And once you know how to use the tools, you can write anything from a 5-paragraph theme to a novel to a screenplay. You just have to know that there is a blueprint and you have to follow it. And so I wrote everything, catalog copy, brochures, business letters. I was amazed how many business people didn't feel comfortable writing a letter about whatever. And with those magazines in town, I started selling very steadily to them. And then 5 years later, I was reading Writer's Digest magazine, and I saw an ad for unpublished children's picture book writers. And I thought, well, I'm an unpublished any kind of book writer. So I ran to the library and got a book on how to write children's picture books. I learned that they're all mostly 32 pages, less than 1,000 words. You don't use a lot of adjectives because the pictures do that part of the work for you. And so I wrote up a story, and the contest required 3 illustrations, and I do not draw. So I found a girlfriend who did. She did some perfectly delightful sketches. We put it in a pretty box and sent it off. And about 3 months later, I got a phone call, and the editor said, she introduced herself, and she said, we had over 530 entries. She said, our committee narrowed it down to 10, then we narrowed it down to 5, then we narrowed it down to 2, and we let a 9-year-old boy choose the winner, and he chose your book.
Wow.
And suddenly I was an author, and that's honestly how it happened.
Oh, this is amazing. This is exactly what I tell people. You never know what life is going to bring.
Absolutely.
And just to find the joy in it, and mm-hmm. you certainly have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's it's a lovely story, and I think a inspiration, because a lot of people say, well, you know, I wasn't thinking of writing, but in the back of their mind they think, well, maybe I could write, but they're not sure if they want to try.
Right.
And you just did it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What a success you've become.
But the difference, I think, is all those little trips to the library I made, because yeah. If I had a nickel for every time somebody's handed me something they wrote, I wrote this story for my grandchildren and they love it. And I look, and at one glance, I can tell that they haven't studied the formula. It's more than 1,000 words, or it's not set up in a 32-page format. And I mean, it doesn't really have to be 32 pages, but you should at least indicate where the page breaks come. There's an art to that. And I think you've got the story, but you haven't done the craft part. You've got to put those two together. It's right brain, left brain. You have to do your homework and get the nuts and bolts ironed out, and then you add the creative story. Then it works.
Wow. You have to teach seminars.
Oh, I do. Right?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was coming up to. Where have you done seminars? What do you do?
Oh, I teach every year at a writer's conference in Glen Eerie. It's in Colorado Springs. We have one, I think it's coming up this year in August. And my girlfriend and I teach it. We've been teaching it for about, I lost count, but I would guess it's about 15 years now. And I also wrote a series of little booklets that are on Amazon. They're called Writing Lessons from the Front. And each little booklet is a certain topic. Like there's the plot skeleton, plotting. Point of view, that's something a lot of beginning novelists have problems with. How to organize your writing so that you can get that book published. Tension, how to keep the people turning the pages. A lot of people just have dead spots, you know, where they're describing things or people are traveling and nothing exciting is happening. And you don't have to have a bomb going off on every page, but you've got to have something that keeps the reader glued to those pages. And so anyway, there are 10 of those. Writing Lessons from the Front. And so those are on Amazon. And that way I did them separately like that so that people could pick the area that they're having problems with and just really bone up on that topic.
Well, this is fantastic. I encourage everybody to go and look at Angela Hunt's page on Amazon and look for these
guides.
Because it's a fantastic thing you've done. And I like the idea of writing them separately so people can pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
But before I let you go, I want to talk about your historical books, Esther, mm-hmm. and Bathsheba, because if I know so many of my listeners love historical novels and mm-hmm. love historical books, and these two are, which you were so kind to bring into the studio, are particularly delightful to read.
Oh,
I mean, they are.
Thank you.
Wonderful reads. And tell me which Esther came first, right? And then
right.
Bathsheba came out last fall, I think.
Right. And there's a third one, Delilah. It's a trilogy. So Delilah comes out, I think, in June.
Mm-hmm.
So I call them the Bible Babe series because they're all women who were exceptionally beautiful, but beauty, you know, is not always a good thing. It's not always an asset because it got Esther kidnapped, it got Bathsheba raped and put in a harem, and of course Delilah sort of turned the tables on Samson with it. So, you know, be careful what you wish for.
But it must have been, when you started off, you knew you were going to do this trilogy of
yes.
the three women.
Because mm-hmm.
because it is really, they're great reads. I just love it when an author comes out with a good idea for a trilogy and just can build on it, you know, mm-hmm. one after another. And each of these is a wonderful read. And again, it's your research. You obviously do a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you studied divinity and you studied the Bible, but have you traveled to Israel? Have you walked the land?
I have traveled to Israel. It's been quite a few years now. And usually I try to go to the place where I'm writing in, just because you pick up scents and sounds and sights that you really can't get
in the
other way.
Well, that's why I asked it, because I had a sense that you had seen some of this. And
mm-hmm.
Because Israel is a special place, and when you go
mm-hmm.
there, you have that special feeling for these locations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I wondered, that you had actually gone there, because it's you've captured the whole feel of the time, I think.
Oh, thank you. That's the highest compliment I think I can ever get from a reader, is where they say, I felt like I was there. And I think, yes, I did it right.
You did it.
Then.
You did it right. Exactly. Because and you certainly did, because these two books are wonderful, and so the third one is coming out in June,
mm-hmm.
and Delilah, which is I'm sure going to be that must have been fun to write. That's a big story.
It is, and I think she got a bad rap. I mean, everything in my research was bad Delilah. She was a horrible woman. She loved money more than Samson and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, no, wait a minute. People don't become the way they are unless something happened to them. So I just sat there for a while and thought, what could have happened to her to make her turn on the man she supposedly loved, Samson? So I came up with a story.
So I'm looking forward to that one. I hope you'll come back in June.
Oh, I'd love to.
Come back to the studio in June, and we're going to talk about specifically about the trilogy of these beautiful women
mm-hmm.
of the Bible, and just talk more about your writing. And I'm just so thrilled that you came into the studio today. You're
My
amazing.
Pleasure.
And we're also, I haven't seen The Risen either yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing it next week. And I will be thinking about you.
Oh, so, thank you.
So thank you so much. It's Angela Hunt, of course. Your website is AngelaHuntBooks.com. AngelaHuntBooks.com. And that's what happens if you don't register. I tell people, writers who are dreaming of writing, register your domain name early, because, you know, that's the names get taken.
They do.
So it's always a good idea for a writer to do that, especially if they have a name that's, you know,
mm-hmm.
common. But
mm-hmm.
AngelaHuntBooks.com, go there and see all the work that Angela's done. It's amazing. I'm so grateful for you to come in.
Thank you,
Angela.
Patsy.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Sean Stout. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hi. I'm great, Patsy. How are you doing?
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm so happy that you're on today. We're going to talk about your novel, A Tiny Piece of Sky, which came out recently, and it is a fascinating book. And I wanted to, you know, it's a book that talks about a very serious subject, but in a very easy way to explain it, and in a, sometimes it's the book is funny, and of course the book has its serious side. Let's talk about where you got the idea for this book, which is set, of course, in 1939, before World War II, and discusses a very serious subject, but the character, that you've created, Frankie Baum, is so funny at times and just so interesting. So tell us, where did you come up with this idea?
Well, I grew up hearing stories about my grandfather, who was of German descent, and my mother would tell me about the restaurant that he owned in their small town of Hagerstown, Maryland, and how in the 30s and early 40s, she was teased, and her sister, she and her sisters were taunted by their classmates because of their last name, which was Beck, but was clearly German, and that, you know, the restaurant itself was had its heyday in the early 1930s, and then my grandfather was accused of being a German spy and of espionage, and there was a boycott of this restaurant. So I grew up hearing all of these stories. My grandfather died in 1943, so I never had a chance to meet him, but I knew a little bit about the history and the restaurant, which was, of course, a huge part of their lives growing up. And then my grandmother died in 1997, and we were cleaning out her apartment and found an envelope of all of these letters dated 1939. They were addressed to my grandfather, Albert Beck, and they were from local civic organizations, from the, you know, Alsatius Club, the Owls Club, the Moose Lodge, those kinds of organizations, written to him, voicing their support for him during this boycott of the restaurant. And they were saying things like, "We know you're a loyal American patriot. We don't believe these rumors of that you're a spy, and we are sorry for the boycott of your establishment, and we hope to rectify this situation." And it was really, those letters were really moving to me, and they really brought me sort of closer to the story itself and closer to my grandfather, who I did not know. And I knew once I read those letters that one day I would write about the story about him and the three young girls, his daughters, and that whole experience. I thought it was just so interesting.
Well, it is a very touching story, and as you said, it is a story, you know, based on something that really happened, and mm-hmm. The main character, well, the three sisters that you've drawn in the story are just so beautifully done. And I love that you've put in there at the end, because you mentioned it about the letters, and mm-hmm. But it is a very moving story.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I was really drawn to to it once I had really started digging in and doing deciding I was going to write this story, and I started interviewing my family and friends of my family, my mother and my friends of my grandparents who were still living, who knew about the restaurant or who visited the restaurant or even worked at the restaurant. And the more I learned about their situation and then learned more about 1939 and the anti-German-American hysteria and the xenophobia and all of that, it really, I was really moved by it and I felt really compelled to write the story.
Because it is a story of intolerance and yes. of the danger of people passing rumors and just not, you know, just not being kind and not being thoughtful.
Right, right. And it is something that, you know, we can still learn from today. But I was just really amazed, you know, to find out, you know, how much sort of the super patriots after World War One were, you know, really engaged in that anti-German-American sentiment where they you weren't allowed to teach German, you weren't allowed to, you know, check out German books in the library, they often burned the German books in the street, you weren't allowed to you know, calls were monitored, phone calls were monitored in this country, you know, to see if you were speaking in German, and there was just a lot of suspicion, and a lot of it was too for political gain. And in this story, I mean, I fictionalized a lot of the characters in this story, but the you know, for political gain, people there were in many towns were looking to use that fear to advance their own careers. And so that's why I chose to put that into the story, where the Mr. Price is, you know, wanting to run for mayor, and he sees this as an opportunity to really advance his own career.
Well, and there are a lot of parallels to events of today, and it's a history. We can learn from history, you know, if we want to. And so it's important that stories like this, which I think is, you know, you've done a beautiful job. I love the as I said, Frankie. She's a girl full of spirit and, you know, a feeling of adventure. And I really like the way you've done her. She's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's the three sisters, even though my mom is one of three sisters, they're very, very much fictionalized, but part of my inspiration for Frankie was being the youngest of three, and I happen to be the youngest of three. And
So you know what really, it feels like.
Yes, too. Sort of being left out and being sort of known as just the youngest, and people in the family dynamics are so interesting in any way, but it's hard to be a sort of a number three where everyone sees you as your age and your family ranking, and it's hard to see beyond that. And I think that's where Frankie's desire to be seen for who she is, it really, I tried to make that come through in the story.
Well, you know, I was so glad that I received the book from your publisher, because mm-hmm. it brought me to something else, and I want to talk to you about this, because I had not read, I'm going to admit, I had not read your Penelope Crump books until I first got this book, and then I went back, and you've written a whole series of wonderful children's books. Mm-hmm. But in many ways, you know, first of all, I was thinking about you. This morning when I served my husband his coffee and toast, and the toast was on a plastic plate, and mm-hmm. it reminded me of your of a little bio somebody wrote about you, I figured, well, she let it be printed about her that she has a sink full of dishes and she lives in a big old house.
Right.
So I thought, I like this girl because as I'm reaching you, I know the dishwasher's full and I know the sink is full, and I think, oh well, what the heck, a plastic plate is just as good. It's a plate after all, right?
That's exactly right.
So I like that attitude, that there are more important things in the world than the dishes in the sink.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, nothing would get done as far as writing goes if if I paid attention to as much attention as I probably should to the housework and to dishes. We don't even own a dishwasher. That will tell you something else about me. But so we wash dishes by hand. I think we're probably the last family in the country to do that. But it's they're often filled. Way above.
They're more. And you know, we're talking about joy on paper. It's the joy that you get on
that's
paper.
Right.
And so, if I give my husband a paper plate, I can say that's joy on paper too.
Oh,
I mean, yeah,
there you go.
You're getting
that's
your
great.
Toast on paper. So enjoy it already. Don't get over it.
Exactly.
Because I want to. Oh, by the way, it is an old house that you live in. You mentioned it.
Yes, it's over 100 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
We have replaced quite a bit, but it has wonderful character. But it is as old things get, things can be replaced, and we've done our share of replacing everything, and now we're on the second round of replacing what we've replaced before. So, yes, it's a constant constant upkeep here. But yeah, creaky floors, peeling plaster, that kind of thing.
But in between it all, you write, and I want to just talk a little bit about. I read the first one of your. Young adult, or not young, they're tween, really, books. Penelope
right,
Crum. Penelope Crum is Mad at the Moon.
Mm.
I love that book, and I think, I know it's supposed to be for, you know, kids, but I think every adult woman should get this book and just keep it there, because it reminds, first of all, it reminds me of something that happened. I've done these kind of things before. I felt very close to Penelope, dressing up on the wrong day.
Oh, yes.
Which I love that part of it. Mm-hmm. And then having to learn how to square dance. I this happened to me when I was a kid, and it's so similar. I thought, oh my gosh, and
yes,
this is a wonderful story.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, I found that I could relate. I can relate to Penelope on so many different levels, and square dancing is definitely one of them. The horrors of having to hold a boy's hand when I was in elementary school, and it just. That and something I continue to do today is get the day wrong of what I'm supposed to do when.
I'm always doing that. I'm always doing that. And the idea of doing do-si-do, swing your partner, it's just like, oh, please. I dreaded that class. I mean, I'm sure I skipped it a couple of times because I said, you can't really be serious. Nobody square dances anymore. The book is delightful, and of course all the Penelope Crum books are delightful, but this one particularly, I'm going to buy it. I have a few friends, I'm going to buy it just for them. I mean, they're not young, believe me, but they just need a good laugh, and this is so funny. And I love whoever did that illustration of
Valeria DeCampo. She's wonderful. She just really could capture the essence of Penelope and her. I love the particularly the interior black and white.
The interior black and white, unbelievably good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the best I've ever seen, and that's why I want to buy this book. Well, for some of the women I know who are writers, and then they sometimes get all, tight and all sort of nervous and worried and stuff. And I think just reading this book, because I love the line in there where Penelope says, I'm an excellent pretender.
Yeah.
I'm an excellent pretender.
And she is. She has an imagination that is really unmatched. And the fact that she would go to such great lengths as paint warts on her hand. On her hands, so that she wouldn't have to hold hands with, her partner in gym class, that she can pretend anything, and to try to get herself out of situations. So,
it really. I'm gonna. As a matter of fact, I think the next time I go to speak to a group of writers, I'm gonna just hand this book out. I'm gonna buy a bunch of them and hand them out, because people have to read this. You need a good laugh, and and this one is fantastic. Now, you have a website?
Yes, it's www.seankstout.com.
Okay, and people can go there and see your work and learn more about you. And of course, I think that it's will be, you know, just, I don't know, has anybody approached you yet to do like a cartoon or a movie or anything about Penelope?
No, not yet. I would love to see Penelope in another form for sure. I think she is a character that has lots of different possibilities and could do different things, but no plans for that.
Well, I think somebody should pick it up because of all the, you know, there are so many characters that they've picked up and they've done shows about that aren't even, not one-tenth as interesting as Penelope. Because I like this. I like her attitude. I like, you know, she's precocious, and but she's independent, and she has all that spirit. And that's a wonderful thing, I think, a real role model for young girls.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I wanted her to embrace the fact that she has a big nose and that she wasn't ashamed of it. In fact, she really appreciates things that sort of stand out in other people, physical appearances, and so she's always looking for something that's unique, something that's interesting to draw, and, you know, why look at something that's the same, and why should everyone look the same and not have any really standout features, and so that's her whole sort of philosophy on appearances, and that's how, so I wanted to have, you know, a character who is proud of something that's very different from others instead of being ashamed of it.
Well, I think you've captured her just beautifully, and I think it is. They're inspirational little books, and sometimes I tell people, you know, adults. I said there are some really great, you know, young adult fiction, or even like this, even younger. It's supposed to be for younger people, but I think it's a great book for everybody that are inspirational. And I think as I said that A Tiny Piece of Sky, which is the novel. Is it your first novel?
Well, it's my first historical fiction, but yes, my first standalone in novel. All the other books I've written are part of series.
So, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to write like you do, and to share this joy and to share the attitude that you have of like in Penelope, of being strong, being brave, and being thoughtful.
Well, thank you very much. I think particularly for young girls around that age, fourth, fifth grade, they think that they really need, and women too, I need, you know, a pep talk every now and then too, but I need a strong voice that can say, you know, you're just, you know, wonderful the way you are, and everyone is different, and you should really appreciate those differences, and not get hung up on really the things that make you different, that you should really celebrate them all.
So what's next for you? What are you working on now?
I am working on a new middle grade novel. It's something different for me too. This is it has some magic in it, a little magical realism, but it's in its very early phases. So I'm plugging away at it, writing as, you know, as much as I can when I can. I have a full time job too, and a four-year-old, almost 5-year-old. So trying to, you know, find time to work on it is a little challenging, but it's coming along.
Well, that I'm sure that you know, I will look forward to the next book, and I will keep an eye out for new Penelope Crumb books, because I think they're hilarious. And and I want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. One of the things that I always ask people to, you know, do you want to say something about your agent? Do you have a good agent?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so my agent is Sarah Davis, and she is with Greenhouse Literary Agency. She's based in London,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and she's so lovely, and I've been with her since the beginning, when I really started to write seriously. And she and I just really connected, and she's got a wonderful sense of humor, and she sort of gets my characters, and she's just great to work with.
Well, thinking about that, how do you work with an agent overseas? You just by Skype or?
No, we just email or a phone call, but with the time difference, I mean, she must never sleep because I usually get a response from her as soon as I send an email, and so I don't know. She must stay up very late in the evening and then get up super early, but she's always very responsive. So we just sort of either chat regularly, either by phone or through email, and I send her what I have when I'm ready to have someone else look at it. But most of the time, I'm just writing until I'm happy with it. It takes me a while. I'm a slow writer initially, and then I'll send it out to her to get her feedback, and then we'll talk on the phone about a couple ideas, and then go from there.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is.
Do you get to go to London to see her, or does she come to you ever?
No, she does come to the States quite a bit. She's in New York and Washington, D.C. quite a bit, so we meet up when we have a chance.
Well, she was very lucky when she found you, because I think you have a great talent and a great future. And
thank you.
I'm looking forward to your next book, and keep me updated on Penelope Crum, because I'm going to be her constant fan from now on. Because
I am a great
pretender, and I think it's a great thing for an author to be.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on the program today. Keep writing.
Pleasure.
And I want to just repeat the website one more time. It's Sean, S-H-A-W-N-K, the middle initial, SeanKStout.com. And I suggest everyone go and have a look at it, because it's really interesting. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was fun. I really like that. It's not, the Penelope Crum series is not just for kids. It's not just for little kids. It's just funny, and everybody needs a good laugh. So I would suggest you go in, look at Amazon or at her website, and pick one of them, because all of them are funny, and it's just great for a laugh. Now, are you a writer or illustrator? Or do you have a legal question? Send me your questions at patsy.radio@gmail.com. Once a month, my guest will be Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. He will answer your questions. I call him the writer's legal eagle. He's mine, and he should be yours. And one of the other things coming up on Thursday, I have a dynamic duo of writers, Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters, Bill Pronzini and Marsha Muller, a husband and wife team, and they are truly amazing writers, and it will be so much fun to talk to both of them, because when they won their Grandmasters, they didn't win it at the same time, so I was wondering how they felt about who won it first. But it's going to be really fun to listen to them on Thursday. So this is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Join me Thursday. Why do I say Tuesday? Join me this Thursday on Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Bye for now. See you Thursday.